Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, March 28, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis from Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Lisa Braltz will also be along this half hour. She gets a lesson on the fine art of sheep shearing in this encore performance of In My Backyard. And meteorologist Peter Levitt will have the latest in agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Here are your last trades on this Thursday afternoon in Kansas City. May wheat, 728 and three quarters, down 45 and a quarter. July, 734, down 45. May wheat in Chicago, 686 and a half, down 50 and a quarter. July, 693, down 43. May corn, 695 and a quarter, down 40. July, 676, down 40. September, 563, down 40. December, 538 and a half, down 32 and a half. May soybeans, 1405 and a quarter, down 48 and a half. July, 1387, down 44. November, 1250 and a quarter, down 28. May soybean meal, 405.50, down 1760. May soybean oil, 5008, down 74 cents. April live cattle, 128.77 and a half, up 142 and a half. March feeder cattle, 135.52 and a half, up 25. April at 143.40, up $3. April lean hogs, 80.85, up 77 and a half. And May lean hogs at 89.40, were up 15 cents. And those are your last trades in Chicago and Kansas City.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lunner's weather highlights, he says the lower Midwest will see gradually improving conditions for field work through the next 10 days. Aggressive field work is not likely to occur during the period, however, as cool temperatures most days during the period will keep evaporation rates low. A few rounds of mostly light precipitation will keep the soil moist, but should not cause the soil to be saturated in very many locations, and the soil should firm up quickly if a period of warm and dry weather evolves. A precipitation event advertised for April 8th through the 10th will need to be closely monitored, as it could cause more serious delays to early planting. Serious flooding is becoming more likely in coming weeks in the northwestern Corn Belt, especially in the Red River Basin. Snow cover late this weekend and early next week in the High Plains region will be very important in protecting jointed wheat from possible damage. Lows could drop down into the 20s into the Texas Panhandle next Tuesday morning.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I can't remember a day since I've sat in this chair, and I've been here about 10 years now, when the trade missed it so much, so big on so many fronts on the quarterly grain stock report, and this is the March one.
Yeah, this is a big miss because even the so-called super pros that make a living crunching numbers and doing survey work and all that was, in that 5 billion bushel mark. Now the trade the range was fairly narrow. It was maybe like, 4.9 to maybe 5.2. I think was probably about as bearish as anybody wanted to be. So it's actually 200 million bushels above what the more bearish people were. So it was a shock, and of course you can see it was a shock because we were limit down in old crop corn futures, and when you see limit moves like that, that tells you you've got the majority of the trade caught the wrong direction. So it was a widespread miss. If these numbers are correct, that's the key is how accurate are these numbers. They should be fairly solid numbers, given that we're halfway through the crop year. But it does show or it does indicate that the December numbers were way off the mark as far as implied feed disappearance for corn and implied feed disappearance for wheat. These numbers basically tell us that feed usage is well under what USDA is currently projecting. And my guess is that you will see that reflected in the April crop report here 10 days or so down the road. A quick eyeball, you probably could drop feed usage 300 million bushels off of the 4.5. So that takes you down to 4.2. There's no other place to use that 300 million bushels, so that'll probably be added on the carry out. So then you got carry out up at 933, pretty much to what it was last year. So those are just rough numbers. I'm sure USDA can massage them a little bit. Might even be able to bump up ethanol if we've got this much more corn around. It's kind of hard to believe we have this large of amount of corn around as tight as it is or how hard it is to buy it. So, the corn must be all out west yet. Eastern Corn Belt corn's pretty hard to find. So the corn inventories are all in the west, and that's going to have to be railed to the east to meet a lot of ethanol demand and ethanol grind. That'll probably be what'll happen here over the next several months.
I thought maybe that corn got squirreled away in the volcanoes of Hawaii or something. When you look at it, it just seems as though USDA may have underestimated production. Not that it's all water under the bridge, but it would be nice to try to understand what happened.
Well, we don't know for sure. We could, that could be the case. We have a little larger corn inventory around production number than what USDA put on the maps there in January. The December 1st report is always has a lot of variables in it because they got to go back and they got to say, okay, this is what the inventory was on September 1, and then due to the early harvest that we had this year, you don't know if that was old crop, new crop, or maybe we had actually old crop actually ended up into this crop year or this year. So there's variable there, especially when you have early harvest. And then you try to come up with a yield estimate, and then you try to come up with, okay, if the yield is this and this is what our supplies are, well, then this is what our production was. So I've always been suspect that maybe USDA may be too low on their acres. I think we had a higher planted acres last year. And, you know, maybe some of that is starting to show up, or we got a higher yield. But this number that they released here today should be fairly solid. It's halfway through the marketing year, and it tells us how much inventory we have now to go through the next 6 months. And it clearly pulls the plug on any kind of argument that we should have that supplies are tight and prices should be higher to ration demand, because the numbers that we got today basically clearly says that we got enough inventory now to go the distance unless we get into some real severe growing season problems down the road here, planning delay problems down the road.
So how will technicians want to read this huge drop today in corn and beans?
Well, the key here is I'm sure corn's going to show some follow-through. I don't know what the options synthetics were showing, but at one time the synthetics were implying the corn was actually trading 18 cents lower. So it was trading somewhere around 58 cents
58,
lower.
That's right.
So a lot of times when you see that, then that kind of absorbs a lot of that selling pressure, because people will take the other side in the option markets and whatnot. So, but we'll have to, first thing, we'll see how much follow through we get next week. And then we'll have to look for some stabilization. But it clearly rips up the market. I mean, like in new crop and even old crop, it basically took all the advance away that we spent three or four weeks trying to build. And that's what happens in bear markets, I guess. It takes it all away in one day, and that's where we're at. So we're back down to our lows in new crop corn, not that far away, and lead futures corns. We'll see what kind of follow-through are. Actually, if you take into account the synthetics, we actually made new lows for the year today.
Right.
So we'll have to see where we go at, go from here. But what we'll see, you know, eventually get some stabilization, and then the market will begin to focus very quickly, I think. Since next week will be April, we'll be watching spring weather patterns, spring planting pace, early crop development, and that'll be what the market will look for direction from this point forward.
And you you like to look at those trends right around this time of year. What is your suspicion on the weather?
Well, my guess is we're going to stay cool for the spring, and some areas to the east are going to be on the wetter side, but I think the western side's going to stay cool and dry. So I do think, but remember, cool is not necessarily freezing temperatures. It's just going to be cooler than normal, just pretty much like what we've had here over the past month. I think that's going to continue through the spring. And that may push planting back a little bit. The market may have to put a little premium into the new crop futures yet before it's over with.
Thank you much, Dan.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. He joins us every Thursday afternoon on the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Lisa Brotz learns that a sure sign that spring is on the way is the annual shearing of sheep in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
I know, I talk a lot about the weather, but winter this year really never seemed like winter, and the recent heat wave was especially enough to make one wonder if it ever really showed up at all. But the first Saturday in March felt chilly in Kathy Cable's barn out in Sydney, Illinois, 15 minutes from Urbana-Champaign. Seemed like a strange time to shear her 9 sheep. But most of these sheep were ladies, ewes, and they were about to deliver their lambs. These ewes were amazing. Big, round, cartoony-looking sheep gals with skinny, stickish legs. The sheep we count to fall asleep brought to vigorous, woolly life. And that was the major issue at hand. They were woolly. The fleece has to go before the lambs come along. And a hoof trim wouldn't hurt either. Making these formerly ubiquitous farm skills extra exciting on this day was a double whammy of relative inexperience. 3 sheep had never been shorn before. 3 sheep had only been shorn once. And 3 of the 5 shearers, students at the University of Illinois, had never shorn a sheep. One of them, Tricia Seal, was psyching herself up.
I've never done it before, so I'm a little nervous. I'm not sure, you know, how hard it actually is. He makes it look easy, but, you know, I know it's not going to be easy.
Before anything could happen, though, they had to get the sheep into the barn. Sheep number 1, standing motionless on the stand like a pro when I arrived, had been fully shorn by Kathy and was penned up and looking positively nude compared with the remaining ewes who were still outside in the yard. They thundered magnificently into the barn, interested in the food bribe being offered. They are sheep. But they turned and thundered right back out again after taking one look at the array of visitors, novice shearers, equipment, and sheep number 1. Wouldn't you? Once lured back into the barn, the sheep were, literally, in excellent hands. Dick Cobb is the instructor for the sheep production and working with farm animals classes in animal sciences at the University of Illinois that yielded today's novice shearers. He's been shearing sheep for 50 years. 50. He told me that back in the day, he could shear a sheep in 5 minutes and shear upwards of 50 in a single day. That was not the goal today, however. He was at Kathy's for the 2nd year in a row to demonstrate shearing technique and to encourage his students. The guy knows his way around a fleece, but he was all about educating the newbies.
What we're doing today is just give them the feel of the equipment in their hands, and you can shear one if you want, or pot of one, whatever works. And I was just really happy that we had some people in the class that wanted to do it.
Kathy was at work on her 2nd sheep. Sheep numbers 3 and 4 were lifted onto their stands. The students were shown by Dick how to use the hand pieces, which are really just oversized versions of the clippers you see in a barbershop. There was a brief moment of hesitation by the first volunteer. She clutched her handpiece. The sheep bawed. The handpiece buzzed to life and she began shearing, tentatively at first, and the other students followed suit. Dick Cobb coached. Wool began to fall off the ewes.
Okay, girl. 1 stroke.
When the shearing and fleece washing were over, Kathy estimated she'd have about 36 pounds of washed wool, which translates into about 30 pounds of yarn. It's now late March. Sheep were shorn and lambs were born. Spring is truly here on our local farms. This is Lisa Brotz for In My Backyard.
Lisa Brotz's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com. Joining us now with a look at the cash grain market is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing, and he is in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon.
I know we're supposed to talk about bases, but we cannot talk about bases without first talking about this marketplace and the fall from the lofty heights that we saw today. What were your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting to come in with a 5.4 on this quarterly stocks number, which was greatly above any of the guesses even. In that lens, much talk about what is our carryout number going to be, which, you know, most people are looking at this thing and kind of running their own figures, but certainly it's getting close to a billion. And when we were talking about 600 and rationing mode for quite some time, it just completely changes the mindset.
So at this point, it doesn't appear we're going to need to ration corn. And with December futures pretty much falling out of bed, and they're 538 and a half, does that basis begin to shrink in and maybe even go under again?
Well, you know, it would be very interesting on the basis. I will say this, here in the last couple weeks, we've seen where some of the places we've been shipping corn to, for instance, feeders out east and southeast, you know, those guys are bringing corn in from South America, and they're saving some money doing it. And so it's pretty tough for us to be competitive with that. Whenever they were talking, you know, 30 to 40 cents they're saving. So, you know, as far as that market goes, that's kind of dried up for us. And then, you know, when you look at this ethanol market, certainly they're talking, a few people have kind of fired back up, and there's a little bit of profitability in the ethanol industry. And ethanol numbers are holding up fairly decent. But, you know, if we could get a few more of them online, it might change things. But, you know, as far as basis levels, I don't look for those basis levels to get super strong here in the midst of this, even though we're going down sharply.
So where did the corn come from?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, the disappearance was certainly the lowest that we've seen that I can remember. And so, you know, whenever we come in here in January and we get a really bullish disappearance number, mm-hmm. Due to mostly livestock, it appears that, you know, we kind of reversed that trend just a little bit. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, as far as where we went down so much, I know with ethanol and exports, they've just been abysmal. So especially on the exports, ethanol for this year hasn't been bad, but, you know, compared to last year, it's just been terrible. So,
well, I'm trying to remember, and I've been in the chair for about 10 years. I don't think I've seen the trade miss it this much, this big of a number.
You're only talking, Dave, almost 10%.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just an enormous number. And so, you know, when I saw that 5.4 this morning come across the screen, you know, I really can't say on the air what I said because it wouldn't be appropriate. But it was an interesting reaction, if you will.
We should talk about soybeans, too.
Yeah, on soybeans, it wasn't near the shocker. You know, we were still above all trade estimates, but it wasn't near the shocker. And of course, we didn't have that limit lower trade in beans, and you know we're looking at 49 lower. And when you factor in the synthetics on corn, we're actually 58. So it was a bigger move in corn than what it was beans. But you know, whenever I look, for instance, at the acreage figures, you know, on corn and beans, those things might be able to change around a little bit here. You know, you look at the way that these markets reacted today, and it kind of makes you raise your eyebrows when people have been talking about switching a little bit from corn to beans to begin with.
You may have seen your lowest bean acreage on the year.
I think you've seen your lowest bean acreage, and I think you've seen your highest corn acreage, is my opinion.
So what is a producer to do trying to figure out how to market this thing?
Well, by all means, Dave, I know I've been talking about this for quite a while. I mean, I'm usually a pretty bullish guy, but I've been advocating setting floors in place for quite some time, and I think that, you know, anything over $12 beans could look phenomenal this fall. I mean, and I'm not saying to go out there and price a bunch on just a fall contract, but by all means, we need to be looking at what profitability we have right now and what it could be if we don't do anything with it. So I'd like to see guys setting floors in place and just being proactive with locking in as much profit as they can, because if we do end up with a decent weather pattern, you know, we could be looking at some pretty tough times.
Thank you much, Matt.
Thank you, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing, and he is in Windsor, Illinois. It's Something on a Stick Day. The day celebrates all foods on a stick, from popsicles and fudgesicles to corn dogs, shrimp, lollipops, skewers, shish kebabs, fondue, and many Chinese treats. And let's not forget all those treats at state and county fairs. Fish sticks, anyone? On this day in agricultural history in 1797, the first U.S. patent for a washing machine was issued. It was called a scrub board or washboard. The hand-cranked washing machine drum came more than a half century later in 1851.
The first electric washing machine, the Thor, was introduced in 1908 by the Hurley Machine Company of Chicago, Illinois. It featured a galvanized tub. In 1832, Henry Rowe Schoolcraft discovered the source of the Mississippi River in a lake in northern Minnesota, which he named Lake Itasca. Of course, the Mississippi today is the lifeblood of grain export trade. And in 1897, Victor Mills was born. He was a chemical engineer who worked for Procter & Gamble. He improved Duncan Hines cake mixes by passing ingredients through large milling drums designed to polish aluminum foil, but made the finished cake less lumpy. He also figured out a way to prevent the oil from separating in Jif peanut butter, and he figured a way to cut down the production time on soap bars from 7 days to just a couple of hours. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Peter Levitt is away, but joining us for our look at agricultural weather is Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel. Good afternoon, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for filling in on short notice. It's much appreciated.
Sure.
46 degrees right now on Friends Plaza. I'd like. Can you give us some more of those and even warmer, please?
We can work on that. Actually, for the next couple of days, it will feel more like spring at last. We've got highs across Illinois will be in the 40s and even in the 50s over the next couple of days through Sunday. And then a cold front pushes through on Sunday night and Monday, and so then we're back in the deep freeze for a couple of days with highs back down into the 30s, and then a gradual warm-up after that. I guess the only, the bright spot is that, the time is on our side and that days are getting longer, the sun's getting a little higher, so it allows us to warm up a little better than we could in January and February. So it's inevitable that spring will eventually get here. That's what I keep telling myself anyway.
Well, we don't think that we're going to be driving any farm machinery in the field in the upcoming week, but could it be that by the middle of April we'll be out there full bore?
It's possible. The 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast are also calling for below average temperatures, so it looks like the cool weather will continue, but that reference point of average keeps getting warmer and warmer. So when we say below average in mid-April, that means something different than it does right now. So, and it's in the 6 to 10 day forecast, it looks like it's still going to be on the wet side in parts of Illinois, but 8 to 14 day forecast looks a little drier. So I think the wet weather moves eastward at that point.
I didn't look at soil temperature maps today to know what the four inches down temperature of the soil is across Illinois. We're still in the 30s by and large?
Yeah, last I looked, we were still in the 30s, in many cases in the mid to upper 30s, except for that far northwest corner up around Freeport. They're still just a little bit above the freezing mark there. But I think the rest of the state is pretty much thawed out in terms of the soil temperatures.
How quickly can soil temperatures rise into that 56, 58, which is sort of a benchmark where a lot of farmers like to plant?
Yeah, it takes several days of temperatures at or above that to really get that pushed up into the and those kinds of numbers. So, the air temperatures are just going to have to warm up for an extended period, about a week's worth of 50 to 60 degree weather, and they should warm up pretty nicely. A lot of the soil is also pretty wet, so that also kind of slows down the warming process.
What are you looking for in terms of trend? Are we going to break the trend that we're in this cool, wet trend by, say, third week of April and move into something a little different then, do you think?
Well, that's kind of implied with some of the longer-range mm-hmm. outlooks that do show us being a little bit on the drier side and on the warmer side for much of Illinois through April. And then the forecast for April, May, and June still has that wetter-than-average percentage or probability there. But at least temperature-wise, they're expecting us to kind of break out of the cold pattern in the second half of April.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
That's Illinois State
climatologist Jim Angel. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.